everybody's mad at us because it's been too negative. So I want to try to be more positive. Everybody's tired of us beating up on Russ. And I want to try to be kind of a more positive environment for him in this one. I don't, and this isn't for the show, obviously. This is just to, like us talking. I just want to be nicer to everybody's like, enough with the negativity about Russ Freshtick.
Yeah.
They're happy with it. They love us tearing up the games.
Yeah. And the one note we've gotten is like, if we could do like a really thick British accent when we say mean shit about the video games, for some reason, just people like that better. But yeah. but the negative stuff about Russ is, yeah, it's getting a little excessive. So I do want to say, Russ, that your muscles look so fucking big, dude.
Yeah. When you decided to start doing this show shirtless, I was like, a little bit agog, I guess would be the word. I don't want to aghast. Mm. No, like aghast, kind of halfway between the two. Yeah. But now I think it brings a really cool energy.
I will say it's very difficult to frame delts on a Zoom call. Yeah. Like it's really difficult. But I think
yeah. Well, the rule of thirds is difficult to follow when your delts occupy like a good fifth of your body mass.
It's tough. I miss seeing your eyes. I haven't seen your eyes for 4 months.
Beautiful eyes. Beautiful, exquisite eyes.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you need glasses, so.
Griffin, goddamn it, we barely made it just already.
Literally all of us are wearing glasses right now. Well, Justin's wearing Gunnar's. That's where my scorn should really be directed.
Yeah, everybody take a turn on these Gunnar's and protect my sight. I wear the Gunnar's so I don't have to wear glasses like you guys. I wear these by choice so I'm not forced to wear them later in life when I'm in my twilight years like you all.
Sure.
I may be the oldest person on this call.
You definitely are.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frosting, and I know the best early access game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. These bad boys have come a long way since Pac-Man. This is not... if you've been peering over your nephew's shoulder and seeing a lot of characters that look like people, and it's not the bleeps and bloops that we remember from our childhood, and we just want to cover that transition into this modern era of, I guess, video games. And this week we're going to be talking about Rogue Legacy 2. So there was a whole other one of these that people apparently loved. But this is 2 we're talking about, the second one.
Now I want, can Justin keep this character up for the entire episode?
That will really seal the deal on no season 2 of Besties.
Chris, you want to tell us what this game's all about?
Yes. Today we're talking about Rogue Legacy 2. It is from Cellar Door Games, and it is a roguelike. It's a 2D platformer that, you know, it's kind of like Castlevania. If you died and lost everything and then had to restart again and make your way through. The difference between it and roguelikes like Spelunky, the best game ever created, is that as you go through the game, you can acquire money, which you can use to unlock health upgrades or new character classes. And you can also find new abilities like a dash move, which helps you get further in the castle. That sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, good work.
It was pretty good.
And we're going to get into the discussion, but I thought there was more. There's so much to discuss. We're going to talk about more, though. I'm anxious to do it, but first we're going to take a quick break.
Damn it, you guys were watching me. You knew that sneeze was coming, and then you all were... I had an audience, and it didn't come out. God, that sucks.
Bummer.
Wow, it's going to be haunting me the entire day.
Rogue Legacy 2. I want to start off with a quick temperature check. Rogue Legacy 1, how deep in the paint did you all go? I went... hard on multiple platforms.
Well,
a lot.
I played it on PC when it was like just first coming out and still kind of early. I played it again on PC when it was finally out, and I just put it again like 6 months ago on Switch. Like that many times I've played through this game, so I really adore the first game.
I even bought it on iOS, and as I was like looking at it in the App Store, I was like, this isn't going to feel right. This tight action platformer is not going to feel right on a phone, but I still bought it anyway because I love this game. It has I am a sucker for like a really good progression loop, and it is hard to find one that is more sort of like viscerally satisfying and rewarding than Rogue Legacy. And also Rogue Legacy, I feel like, came out in this really like this zenith for, maybe not zenith, but like when roguelikes were becoming a extremely like standardized genre. And it was the first one that I can remember that didn't frustrate the hell out of me because it had a really good head on its shoulders when it came to like ongoing progression that you did not lose when you died.
The smartest thing about their loop, and I don't think the progression loop, and I don't think anybody has done this better. Other people probably mimicked it, but there were a lot of inexpensive upgrades, like, you know, boost your health some, boost your attack some, increase your magic, whatever. A lot of inexpensive upgrades, and then you kind of hit an invisible plateau where, like, when you finished buying stuff in town and you go back into the dungeon, you lose all your money. So you have to start doing better to start getting more money to get the better upgrades. It's not forcing your hand, but there comes a certain point where you're just not making enough. If you do badly in a run, you just don't make enough to buy anything.
Yeah.
So all that money goes to waste, and you have to do a little bit better to get the money for the next upgrade.
And by that point in the game, you've played a lot because it takes a while to get to that point. So you've actually have the experience required to do better because you fought all these enemies before. So it actually like loops back in on itself, which is, I think from a game design standpoint, just genius. I really adore the first game.
There are a ton of genius things. The castle is randomized every time you play. There are four different sections, and I don't want to spend more time talking about the first game than we do the game we are actually supposed to be talking about. But you can also sacrifice some of the money on your next run and lock the castle down so that it will not be randomized. So then you get to choose, like, am I going to do a gold farming run? Am I going to do a progression run where I actually try to take some bosses down? It is a fucking amazing game. And if you have not played it, even if you're not a fan of the roguelike genre, you owe it to yourself because it is a hallmark game, I feel like.
So I was very much looking forward to Rogue Legacy 2. And I think it is... I was really looking forward to this discussion because I think it's really interesting where it is at. And it is so important, I think, to frame this as like, this is an early access game. This is not the finished product. But in a lot of ways, it's evolving over Rogue Legacy. The first one had a sort of pseudo-retro art style. This is much more hand-drawn. It kind of reminds me of like Behemoth. Games,
the Castle Crashers people, or Alien Hive.
Yeah. Sorry, thank you. It's been a while. They're not quite as
ubiquitous.
Thank you. The traits, which are the things that sort of make each run feel different, most of which are sort of negative. Some are, I would guess, neutral, and a few are actually positive. There's a lot more of those. I think they're more fully realized. And I don't remember if you... Did you get the gold boost for hard ones?
No. Okay, that was, so that's a new that's thing. That's a brilliant, brilliant thing. I think, Russ, you wrote about it for Polygon.
Yeah. So there's basically a new mechanic. It's actually something that they experimented with just a tiny bit with the first game. Basically, the really bad, annoying, super annoying traits from the first game. For example, Vertigo, you basically have to play upside down. And that's miserable. No one wants to fucking play upside down. It's awful. So what they did was to encourage people to like give themselves a little challenge, they'll give you a little boost in the amount of money that you make. So that they only did that for Vertigo in the first game. Now they've applied that to all of the traits where like the really bad ones in this game, for example, the like most basic one I can describe, you only get one hit point. So if you get hit, you're dead. That's it.
That one's wild though, because you get like a 100% gold boost.
Right. So you get, well, it's actually 150 last I checked. So you get an enormous gold boost. So if you can do really well and dodge all of the attacks, which is possible, I've done pretty good runs using that, you'll make a ton of money. So they, what that allows them to do is basically rebalance the entire game around those bonuses so they can put in really shitty traits but reward you a ton for using them, and it actually makes it like a lot more interesting. I do want to mention, because Justin was sort of getting into it, but I want to talk specifically about the early access aspect of this game, because it's very important that people understand early on how much is in this versus how much is not in this. Yeah. I think a lot of people use early access as like kind of a shorthand for like, well, you know, the game's out in 3 months, but early access. I think Fortnite was in early access for like 3 years or something like that.
It covers an enormous range now, early access.
Yeah. In this case, it is maybe the most true example of early access I've ever experienced in a video game because Griffin mentioned there were four biomes in the first game. There's really just one. You can visit two in this build, but there's really just one that is like fully complete. There's like very few, maybe like a quarter, if not less, of the like number of upgrades you can get. There's very little armor to get. The game feels very early. And they haven't shied away from this. The logic from the developers is basically, when we first made the game, there was so much community feedback, so they ended up having to do like a bunch of like post-launch changes. And now they're basically integrating that into the development cycle. So for the next year, they're going to be doing these updates based on community feedback of what they're seeing in the build. But again, the build is extremely early, which I'm sure is going to apply to a lot of the stuff that comes up in this discussion.
And to talk about that idea of community feedback, I'm not sure where I land on this ethically. I don't know if that's the right phrase for it, but it feels a little like they're using this as a QA opportunity. And I don't mean that in the Bethesda, the game is broken sense of quality assurance.
Yeah.
I mean that in, you mentioned the money rewards, like for like, I hate to call some of them bad challenges because some of the challenges are good. They're good challenges. And some of them are truly bad, as in they're annoying and not fun. But the challenge balance is so strange. Like, there's one where I think you can't collect any health items, and you get 50% coin boost, which is a lot. Like, you can really go ham on those runs. And there's ones where you can't even see your own character. It's just blurred, like 10 feet on both sides, and that one is a 10% coin boost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait, what? Like, this is so much more challenging, and I'm barely getting rewarded for it. And I want to be clear, I'm not complaining about it. I think that is the way they see this development cycle working is, hey, here is a game that's going to require tremendous amounts of balancing.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we are a small studio. There's no way we can test this. The best opportunity for us is to create effectively a very clean build. That's the weird thing. You mentioned, you know, this is early access. I played plenty of early access games where they're like literally not playable.
Yeah.
And this is playable. It's just not balanced.
And again, this is not a slight against it as much as it is like an interesting observation of like scale. It feels more like a demo than an early access, which like I know it's going to be fleshed out, but like it does, the very small amount that is there does feel finished, and it feels all right.
Yeah.
But just to like, I feel like they have earned a decent amount of credit with their first game and how, you know, much they polished it up and listened to community feedback and did the work. And I just saw that they just tweeted that they were going to remove the like blur based visual options because they were like actually giving people really bad headaches.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
So like that's one very good example and honestly, like that is good because I would say too many of the like traits are, you can't see super good, and that's like not it's not the most interesting choice, I don't think.
When you're in the cycle of development when you've been working on this game, I think they've been working on this game for a few years now. When you're in that cycle, I think it's very difficult to look outside of yourself and say, hey, this is something that's not fun, or this is unbalanced. Like,
right.
You need that external support. Now studios, you know, huge studios like Activision, et cetera, as Plant said, have a QA team that they can sort of rely on. You know, I know there's some complexity here with regards to like, should you be charging people for something that's this early? And that's really, you know, I think I would be more concerned about it if they weren't so explicit in terms of what's in the build, which they are. But yeah, I mean, it's early.
I think it's kind of interesting from that perspective. I don't think I've ever felt like a QA tester in the way that I do playing this. And I feel like it's an interesting insight into game development that, and I don't know, I've never made a game, so this is absolutely my own perspective as an outsider.
Well, you made Justin McElroy's Cool Skater back in 1999. You remember that one?
For the 3DO. It was actually the last 3DO game that came out. No, but I think it's a miracle that all the things work. And then I feel like the fun is a razor's edge that you probably get to right at the end. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the last thing that you do is like, and now it's fun. Okay, print it. And I think that you're just before that point in Rogue Legacy 2. I want to play a very quick clip. It's from the hit film Superbad, where Michael Cera is playing the getaway Black Monday. Okay? And he dies. It's a 10-second clip. There's something about... I love this little reaction that he has. And I have... it has come to my mind so many times while I'm playing this game. I'll play it for you real quick. Don't talk. And again, he has just died in the game, The Getaway Black Monday.
Fuck me. I can't. That's fun. Why do they make that? If you can't even win, then why am I fucking playing? Do you want to go see what my dad has?
So that moment of like, well, that's fun. Why do you even make that? If I can't win, why am I playing? there are just these moments in the game where it feels like, well, do you want me to have fun? Are you trolling me? Like, does it? I'll tell you the one thing to me that is a big change from Rogue Legacy, and I don't think it's quite there, and I think it's interesting because I would be shocked if it remains the way it is. There are two. They're called heirlooms in the game. I'm assuming there'll be more at some point. There are these heirlooms where, as you're going through the level randomly. Again, because it's randomly generated. Sometimes you will find these, they're very Metroid-like statue holding a thing. And it's like you have to complete this challenge to get the thing that they're holding, right? Mm. One is the power of empathy, and one is the power of momentum. And I don't know power of empathy. I have yet to actually finish it. Power of momentum, though, if you finish this pretty difficult challenge, it gives you the sprint, which dash. Is sort of like a dash, yeah. Which is like an air dash, or, you know, dash in on level, but you can dash the air, which is like basically an essential tool, right? And the problems with this are twofold. One is they're randomly generated. You don't always find them. You only find, you know, at most you'll find one. Sometimes neither are there. And they're randomly generated. And also you may not have a build that is conducive to actually like beating the challenge. I had a couple of builds with traits that made it like basically impossible.
What's an example? Because I'm
like a low health build is like not conducive for what is essentially like a pretty challenging platforming challenge where if you screw up a couple times as a mage, you're boned. But if you're playing a barbarian with like, you know, quintuple the health pool.
Oh, I mean more literally than that. I had there's one challenge where there are spikes just above your head to make it so that you don't jump, and they're trying to teach you to dash, right? And I forget what the thing is called, gigantism, which made me so tall that I was immediately getting hit by spikes. Like that is one of those like, well, that's fun. Why do you even make it that way if you don't want me to? And then when you die on those, it's like triple frustrating because like, how long till I find it again? What build will I have when I do find it again? And will I actually finish it the next time? And also, what I think is like even worse about it is like the dash is an essential move, right? And I had been playing for probably 6 hours probably 4 hours when I unlocked it. And by that point, like my rhythms were such that I wasn't instinctually reaching for it. It's like an essential part of this tool set that every character has. And yet I wasn't thinking in terms of like, oh, I've got my dash, I should use that, and I had to build that up. I would be and if you guys got power of empathy, love to know what that is. I have a theory but
yeah, it's extreme. It's like much harder than the first one, for what it's worth, like that challenge. I like what they're doing, which is,
but you're not going to tell me what it is. Okay.
You're able to read clues out of runes that are scattered around the world. Like there are those.
You can talk to ghosts and they give you like hints about hidden shit.
I think what they're trying to do, and I think it will make it in the final game, because I think it is at its core a good idea, but I completely agree that there's polishing to be done, is, as you said, there are certain abilities that everyone should just have. The dash in the first game was not a thing that everyone had. You had to equip the dash as part of your runes for it to even work. So now they're saying, no, we're going to say that everyone gets all of these abilities at all times, but you need to do this very difficult challenge to have it permanently. So like, that's a pretty big leap, as you said, in ability. Like it's a big deal. So I understand them wanting to make it feel like very difficult and a challenge and very satisfying when you finally do it, which I felt, but it is, I agree, inexcusable to have those challenges be unbeatable if, for example, you have gigantism and can't fit
under the spikes. If your body too big.
What I think they'll do with it, I suspect, and I could have sworn this happened with one of my abilities in a challenge, is they'll just turn off all the tweaks. That you'll just have a normal build, like a blank slate build when you go into that challenge.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
That seems like the very obvious fix. Anyway, the thing that I did want to say about this, like, is it fun? Is it not? If you are curious about how a game evolves and like how development works, of all the early access games, this is the one. Like, because at the end of the day, if you play the main, like the first build, the general sword knight build, and you play through the first stage, this is Rogue Legacy 1.5. It's extremely polished. It is very fun. And then if you want to venture out into the unknown, that's also an option. If you want to play as the archer or the mage or the other characters.
The barbarian.
Are not balanced really at all. That's cool. Like, it's still fun. It will infuriate you on some level. You will have much more of the super bad reaction. But the cool thing about this is, the game is actually playable. It is largely good and enjoyable. And knowing that, it makes it easier for me to go kind of screw around with all the weird stuff. I mean, like, whatever. Like, yeah, it's a little broken, but I'm very curious to see how it evolves literally the next time I turn this on.
The archer's cool. The archer has a cool class talent where if you press Y anywhere, he'll create a floating platform, which I don't think I've ever seen for like an archer type class, but that makes it really neat because you can like get a good angle on a battle sometimes.
I also picked the archer. I had to get used to the archer's like bow and arrow. It's kind of cool. It will like hang you in the air for a second if you like try and shoot it in the air, and you have to like manually aim it in 360. And that takes some getting used to, but it's pretty powerful. But the reason I played the archer was for that ability, because I enjoyed Rogue Legacy 2, but I'm probably not going to come back to it until I see a patch note that says like the sheer number of environmental hazards has been reduced, because it's out of control. Please. But there are trap rooms this time where like there's a little board on the floor that you can jump down through, and sometimes you jump down through those and there's action and adventure and intrigue and mystery and fun, and sometimes you jump down there and it's just spikes. And or like you jump down there and there's like a wall of flame chests that are going to hit you in 1 second if you don't jump the fuck out of there really fast. And that's fun. Never times zero times. Yeah. And it's so frustrating because you get on a good run where you have a good build and you're getting like lots of gold and you're finally working your way towards like some big expensive upgrade you want. And then you run into one of those and it's like, ah, gosh. But again, like that is the exact type of thing that I feel like is just primed for tweaking and just delete some spikes.
I just wanted to mention, to put a pin in it, the if you go to the main screen of Rogue Legacy 2, they actually have the patch notes like right there on the giant main screen with all the changes. And I just went through, after playing like for 4 or 5 hours, I just went through and scrolled back, because they even have stuff that was even before it was released to the public.
Oh, interesting.
And you can really, it's amazing how much they've changed. They talk at one point, they talk about the barbarian specifically because it was underpowered. So they like jacked the damage up way ahead of where it was. And they're like, well, it might be overpowered, but it's super fun. So maybe we'll just leave it this way. And that's honestly the sort of thing that I think you're going to see over time. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how this game evolves.
It is very cool to have the opportunity, if you're somebody who is interested in game development, I would say, and I don't want this to sound like homework, it's a fun video game, but like there's interesting things like, I got a big kick out of coming to a bridge, and they're like, now normally this is going to go to a different place, but we didn't build that place. So you can go look around if you want, because there's not a lot there, we're making it. But here's just a note from us to you. And I really felt this weird sense of being like in it with them at that moment. Like, okay.
If you cross the bridge, you can actually see one of the developers' arms just like in the frame for a second. Like, whoops. Right. Whoa.
Oh, like, no, they saw it. Fucking Harold in the purple crayon just like scribbling the world in as you're jumping. But I don't know. I will say this. I did not have a huge amount of fun playing it. I thought it was a lot more interesting than fun at this point. I have zero doubt that it will terminate in a extremely polished, you know, addictive, fun, well-realized final product. Like, I have no doubt about it. And the question of whether or not they should release it at this point, I think really comes down to personal responsibility. Like, if you want, it's your money, no one's forcing you to do it, and they have been very upfront about what it is. I think there's a lot of games where, like, if I could pay now, I'd love to dip in and see what's going on. And I think that's, you know, if you're down for that, then I think it's absolutely worthwhile, because I don't know that you'll get a lot of opportunities like this, honestly.
Yeah. I have one more thing that I want to hit, just because I love that this is happening in video games. This is a game that is not about politics, that is deeply political, and I love how much it just goes for it. Not even that I agree with its politics, I largely do, but there was a great piece on The Outline maybe a year ago about how all video games are inherently political, and how, like, you just are so used to it, because every time you play a shooter, you're like, whatever, military-industrial complex. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just here for it, baby. And this game, with its traits, I mean, I think, like, the one of the very first ones you unlock is healthcare.
It's universal,
like,
healthcare.
Yeah, and it's called, like, universal healthcare. And when you unlock it, just this big banner pops up, and it's like, welcome to the future. Your kingdom has decided to tax the rich to care for the poor. A contentious decision for sure, but let's see how it pans out. And it's like, I just like that games are recognizing that they're made by human beings who have the freedom to not just have generic, like, congratulations, plus one to health. Like, you can just say whatever it is you're feeling. You're an indie studio, swing for the fences.
There is one trait that does nothing, that just says you're, the trait is just FMF fan. And that is a reference to Full Metal Furies, which is the last game they made between Rogue Legacy 1 and Rogue Legacy 2. And the trait just says, Full Metal Furies fan, you have great taste, you are probably Korean. Because I guess that is where the audience for the game is.
I wanted to share one more. The Living Safe, which the banner is Welcome to Offshore Banking. And it says, before being transmogrified, the Living Safe hid money for the rich to keep from the poor. ... Now that he's on your side, he doesn't seem so bad.
That's really good.
No, I think it's fascinating. And I think that if you, you know, if you're in for it at all, you know that already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know already if this is, like, gonna be your thing. But I think it's, I honestly think it's cool that they're giving people the opportunity, because that's the other thing, is there's a cost to, obviously they're charging people money, but there's a cost to getting a game into a state where you're comfortable opening the doors to the public. Like, I would imagine it's sort of like, you know, sealing off the corners, mm-hmm. you know, like rounding off the corners, just so it's like not dangerous
fucking
for people to come in.
Again, Jesus Christ.
Okay, come on. Let's take a break. Never mind. Whatever. This is a podcast, and here's a commercial in the podcast.
Great questions coming up.
Do we have emails?
We have so much good mail. We're going to be talking about the roguelike. Y'all, this one is from Dark Honey Doomat. What is every bestie's favorite roguelike? And also, keep up the great work. I mean, there's only one answer, right?
I mean, Spelunky's going to be at least half of this call's answer, right?
Yeah, the right.
It's very good. It's probably it's so iconic. It's probably that for me.
I can mention, like, my number two, which is not Spelunky.
What is that?
And that is Binding of Isaac.
Binding of Isaac is way up there.
Really,
I think.
Tremendous.
I would say Slay the Spire, if we would count that one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's its own thing. Or Dead Cells is,
Dead
course,
Cells is really
a
good
fucking classic.
Yeah. Juice?
I think it's gotten fuzzier because you're seeing the core idea of roguelike. I think it's sort of what you saw happen to MMOs, where like games that weren't MMOs were adopting sort of the core tenets mm-hmm. of MMOs and sort of like strip mining them. Like I'm playing Griftland still, and that is something that like has roguelike elements. You're like repeating your journey and there's cumulative progression, but like it's really more of a deck battling game that just has that in there. I would say though, for me, it's Dead Cells. I just don't think it's been topped.
You're missing the best that isn't Spelunky. Prey Moon Crash, one of the best games of this generation.
We can't. I tried it.
I forgot about your fetish.
That game. No one likes it. Rules. It rules.
Ooh, quick plug for FTL though. Also, yeah. Ooh, that's really close.
Yeah, it's good.
Between Dead Cells and FTL for me.
Okay, next question from Dave. What subgenre do you find to be the most effective for a roguelike? Platformer, a twin stick shooter, turn based combat, etc. I think this kind of gets at what we were all talking about, right? That like. It's spread so far.
Yeah, I think a lot of great games have used a lot of different genres to the point where, like, I am not convinced that I could tell you what the best one is. I think we've listed, it's pretty crazy, like, we've listed 5 or 6 games at this point, and all of them had different genres. Binding of Isaac's like a shooter, card game, platforming game. Like, what's funny is that none of them are in the style of Rogue, which was effectively a turn-based, top-down RPG.
Right.
So like I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts? I honestly think like if it's a great game, it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't think there's I think there's a way to implement it. I would say that what I like about the card battling thing, like the card-based deck battlers like Griftlands or Monster Train that have done it, is that it feels really good to get like adding the new cards is a very natural way of that progression, because it's not necessarily making it easier, but it is evolving it as you play, which I think is a cool
energy. Yeah, I would also add, I think it's good for card games because roguelikes traditionally are very tense. Like when I play Spelunky or Binding of Isaac, like you really have to be like zoned in on it. And for like, you know, card games, obviously you could take a break whenever, like you just stop at the end of a turn and it's fine and you don't have to like ramp
up. You also get interesting opportunities to rebuild decks, so like you get different cards each time you play, and that like makes the run feel different in a very organic way.
I will say, like, regardless of the genre, if it doesn't have significant enough like carryover, like minor boosts that you can do, like the castle upgrades in Rogue Legacy. Like I have very little patience for a true roguelike. Even Spelunky, like you can get the upgrades to unlock the like shortcuts or whatever. Without some element like that, like it is hard for me to not feel like I'm just wasting
my time. The other the like flip side of that is not necessarily upgrades, but unlocks. So like Binding of Isaac and Slay the Spire both do this. I'm sure other card games do this. We're like, hey, these cards can actually start showing up now, or these items can actually start showing up now, and that mixes things up so you feel like you're progressing.
Yeah, the one thing that I'd add to that is it's not a genre, but just mobile gaming.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it has kind of been a perfect genre for mobile games. I think of Zaga 33, 868 Hack. Like less obscure things like FTL on the iPad. But I think there's something about that kind of classic Rogue formula where you have time to make your move and then the game reacts to you has worked really, really, really well on mobile.
We're kind of dancing around. There's a game that we are playing that me and Russ, and I know Justin's picked it up too, that we're playing called Heroes of Hammerwatch, that I think we're going to save for the What Else Are You Playing segment. But I know we're running out of time, but that it is like a really, really, really good example of, I think, a roguelike game that has enough sort of like, fuck, I lost, you know, a lot of stuff challenge with the like continual, well, I am still building this house brick by brick.
Let's dig into that just a little bit more. I got one more question for you. And this is from Joe on Twitter. What single attribute from your current real life would you want carried over if you were able to respawn after death?
Probably just my strength.
Yeah.
All the work I've done on my muscle tone and, you know, I've been going to Russ's, he calls it the Iron Church. Mm-hmm. And I go there, I fly there every week. I know you're not really supposed to be doing that. And
it's on my jet, you know, so it's fine.
It's on Russ's jet that he earned with his muscle money. Yeah. And that's what he calls it, his muscle money. And I say, like, what does that mean? Do you, like, pose? Are you, like, a muscle model? Do you do, like, muscle contests?
Among
and he,
others.
Like, just kind of, he just kind of smiles. So, like, I don't know if, I don't know what he's up to. But, yeah, I fly to his Iron Church every week, and he has me sort of pick up heavy things. Mm-hmm. And I'm huge now. So that'd be great.
Yeah. I would keep my my bad habit of eating my fingernails. Not eating them, you know, chewing them off. Because it would keep me humble, you know? Mm.
Yeah. No, I'd want the opposite. I would want my huge body. My
Juice.
Good wiener. It's not great, but I made my piece with it. I think that would be nice. I guess the piece I've made with my wiener.
Jesus.
That's what I actually want. The sense of acceptance.
I bond mostly with my with Rogue Legacy 2. There's a perk that gives you colorblindness, which I have in real life. And I would never want to lose that.
Does that make you? Does that make it so you can see color when you play with that? Yeah, it does.
It's actually this double colorblindness that comes back around. My favorite thing in life is when I tell people I'm colorblind and they ask me what color things are, which is definitely something you should do to someone with some sort of deficiency.
If they want to prod your deficiencies, there are so many more interesting avenues they could go down.
This is the Be Nice to Russ episode, Justin.
You're right. You're right. I meant too generous. He works too hard.
Real quick, what else are we playing? Here's a Hammer Watch. Me and Russ have been getting real, real, real deep into it.
Plant, did you play this, by the way?
I haven't played it yet. I've been playing it's this little game that you've never heard of called Nier Automata and Spelunky.
Okay.
Oh, look, I'm appearing. I'm doing a guest on another podcast, and they asked me to bring my two favorite games.
Here's a Hammer Watch. It is a roguelite gauntlet game, basically, in the style of Gauntlet. Does Gauntlet have a, like, genre name? Gauntlet is a, if you're not aware, is like a very old school arcade game where there were several different classes.
Isometric action, I guess,
where you shot. Yeah. I think the original Gauntlet was just like four cardinal directions, and you just like go through a top-down dungeon and kill scores and scores of monsters that just kind of flood toward you. You collect keys, open chests, get, you know, treasure, eat meat to get your health back. Like, a lot of that stuff is here in Heroes of Hammer Watch, and there have been a lot of games made in the Gauntlet style,
including Hammer Watch. This Heroes of Hammer Watch is actually a follow-up to a game called Hammer Watch, which I actually think we've talked about on the Besties before many years ago.
I don't remember.
And that game was a very, I would say, not a modern, it's obviously retro-inspired, but like a more modern take on the very core Gauntlet style, where the levels were set and there was no like real progression system. There was progression, but it was very minimal. And now Heroes of Hammer Watch is a follow-up to that, where basically all these new roguelike and modern mechanics have been added to that formula. And yeah, I think Griff and I have just been playing it nonstop.
It has got its hooks into me. We're playing it on Switch. It's been out on PC for like forever and just came out on Switch a couple weeks
ago. And Xbox. It's out on Xbox as well.
And Xbox. It is really fun. It is tight mechanically. Like I didn't expect a Gauntlet style game to like feel this good, but like when you are in the groove and like running into a room filled with dozens of enemies and just weaving between bullets, and like it has twin stick shooter appeal, I think, like once you get good at it and you can like be evasive and sort of calculated about your approach, like it feels really good. There's eight different classes, I think, all have like different ways of like, they all have a different feel, which is really impressive. Like you, Justin's been playing Paladin, which is just like you run into a room, you have a dash, you can get up close and tank a few hits. I'm playing as a priest where I can heal my teammates or drop like a damaging glyph on the ground. So I want to like pull enemies around a tight corner and just watch them run into my death zone. And so like all the classes feel really good, but then it has like an obscene number of progression mechanics where you can collect ore throughout your runs that you use to upgrade your towns, where you can like upgrade a blacksmith to buy more upgrades that are permanent, or upgrade your shop where you can buy sort of like one-off item upgrades that you lose when you die, or buy a chapel with very, very expensive permanent upgrades, or buy, like, it is very complex, and it doesn't do a great job of explaining all that complexity, but I feel like once you get into the loop, which took me a while to do, it is inescapable. It is really, really fun.
What's amazing for a game that's so complex, and they've been designing it for like several years now, is that it seemingly has no audience.
Nobody's playing this game. You can look at the server list of everybody hosting a game on Switch, and it's almost always empty. Like, nobody.
What's amazing is that there is one guy who has officially taken on the mantle of, I'm going to teach the world how to play this game better. And his YouTube channel is just filled with videos. And the videos have like 10,000 views or something like that. But they're all great, like really good deep dives into how this game works. And the fact that this developer, probably a very tiny developer, I would imagine, has like sunk this much time into and effort into this like really core fan base, I think is really great. Like, they clearly love what they've made, and they've spent a lot of time updating it with various DLCs and stuff like that, which is all included in this pack.
Which is to say, help us grow this fan base.
Yeah,
sure. Don't let them be so lonely. They deserve goodness.
Now I should mention why I know why the fan base is small. Part of the thing to keep in mind is that the first chunk of this game, I would say the first few hours, are pretty brutal and glacial. In the same way that, like, you know, when you first start playing Spelunky, you die 60 times on the first level. You really do, like, it is very, very slow early on. I would strongly recommend, if you can play it in multiplayer, it is really designed with that in mind. I was able to play it mostly solo, but once Griff and I got into a multiplayer game, it like really started clicking.
It really clicks. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Hoops, tell me about Song of Bloom.
Song of Bloom's a really interesting little iOS game. I like it is very abstract. It's hard to describe also. I guess puzzle would be the specific genre. But when you start it off, you see this little movie where a narrator is describing it's again very abstract about her place in the world, and as you play through the game, you learn that there are little gestures you can do while you're watching this movie that open up different pathways to different puzzles. So, and as you do those puzzles, which are all extremely different, look completely different, sound completely different. Some look like yarn. Some look like one. There's one that looks like it's on someone's skin. There's another where it's like tearing up pieces of paper. Everyone looks completely different, but it all springs from this initial little black and white movie that you watch. So, like, there's one where there's a dial, a picture of a dial in the movie, and if you draw a square around it, it launches a mini game. And once you complete that, then you learn about another gesture you can do within it. And each time you finish one of these mini games, you're brought back to the main screen, which is like a plant that is growing and branching out. And as you complete each of the branches, it unlocks other branches for you to explore. And it's very beautiful and haunting. And one of these that uses all the parts of the phone in really interesting ways. I love games. There was another one like that had like 99. It was called 99 maybe, or had 99 different like challenges in it like that. But like there's one where these scraps of paper form a sort of abstract Pong game, and you discover that moving the paddles you do with the volume buttons. So you're using the volume buttons to actually move the paddles back and forth. And there's little stuff like that. Like one just opens up a chat screen, like an iMessage screen, where the person is messaging you in like indecipherable language, and you have to figure out like what they want back and what you need to do. And there's like little hints hidden in when you complete other puzzles, there are sometimes hints for how to unlock different pathways in puzzles you've already completed. Mm-hmm. Like you'll see shapes where like, oh, if I arrange the scraps of paper in that way, it'll unlock a different pathway for me to go down. So it's very small and lovely. I've actually found myself like playing through it very slowly because I don't want to rush through it because it's so nice and lovely. So it's called Song of Bloom on iOS.
Next week, we are talking about one of the coolest games I have ever played. There's a lot of skepticism from my comrades here who have not yet played the game.
Thought it was a joke when he said it.
They thought it was a joke, but it's actually the best. If you can get it to run on your computer, which is not a guarantee because holy moly, does it take a lot of power. And that game is Microsoft Flight Simulator. In parenthetical, 2020 edition. Don't go out and buy the old versions. They're very different games.
Chris Plant told me it's very accessible within just just one mere hour. I'll be in the skies. Okay.
Imagine that you've never played a first-person shooter.
Which compared to planes is good.
Imagine you've never played a first-person shooter, and then somebody is like, oh, you could learn how to play shooters for the first time ever in an hour. Incredible. That's what they've done. They've made it so that a common layperson can fly a real Airbus. Wow. You remind me of, I told Steffi about this game. And I was like, Steffi, I like came out of my room like in a state, you know, covered in sweat.
Windswept hair.
Yeah, like I was like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix when he comes out of the pod. And, like, just
you ripped off your goggles.
and I was like, Steffi,
I need $2,000 to buy a flight stick now.
You won't believe it. The entire world is in this game. I found our house in this game. And she's like, uh-huh. And then what? I was like, that's enough, right? No.
Did you see yourself in your house playing Microsoft Flight Simulator? Because if not, you like that.
I did, and then it just kept going in. I was like, ah!
Further.
So next week's we'll be discussing MapQuest, which also has the entire world in it.
Monsters.
So that'll be a fucking journey. Come on that journey with us, because I'm excited about the journey. If you've never played a flight simulator game, I would love to get two emails from you. One before you play the flight simulator game, and one after you play the flight simulator game. If you've never played it, that's the experiment I want to run. You can send that to mail@besties.fan.
Or you can send it to our Twitter @thebestiespod, yes. Because we all understand that Twitter is a little more usable.
Two tweets. It's got to be two tweets replying to yourself, one before you play the flight simulator game and one after, because I want us to all go on this transformational journey together.
Hey, where can people listen to us?
They can follow and listen for free on Spotify, which they know because they're hearing this right now, but they also can share the show. If you don't mind, besties.fan is the link. Just say, hey, here's an interesting discussion about Rogue Legacy 2. And that's going to do it for us. So thank you so much for listening to The Besties. Enjoy. Be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Send the world's best friends.
There he goes.
Fly the world's best planes.
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!